Good morning, Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I want to thank all of you that are joining us today. I don't know what part of the world you're listening from, but I'm in the desert southwest where we have raging wildfires going on not too far from where I am, up on Mount Charleston. And, of course, New Mexico and Colorado and California all have fires going on. So we just send out blessings of healing and help for all those people that have been in the path of fire and have perhaps lost their homes or lost significant things in their lives from the fires. And we call for the fire spirits to have mercy and to recognize that what they're doing, sometimes the fire spirits and the wind spirits start playing games, and they get so caught up in their game that they don't realize that they're rushing into an area where there are homes and people. So we just ask for the fire spirits and the wind spirits to notice if they are hurting people and to move their game somewhere else or to end that game completely for right now and take it up somewhere where it won't harm anyone. Okay. And so today we have Louisa Kolker with us as a guest. She was with us back in May. And if you did not listen to the show back then, I would advise you to pull it up from the archives and listen to it, because she's fascinating. She has had such an interesting life. She is a shamanic healer and a licensed psychotherapist living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But the path she followed to get to this place in life was so unusual. She was born into a home where her mother was a doctor and her father a psychiatrist. And, of course, she was born with her psychic abilities wide awake and fully functioning. And in the home of a psychiatrist, psychic abilities are not really accepted as normal. So she had to go through some very difficult times with understanding what was happening to her when she could see things and hear things and be aware of things that other people were not aware of. She went from that to having an amazing experience at age 14 in Mexico, where she looked into the eyes of an Indian woman and had this amazing awakening where everything, suddenly she could hear people's thoughts and she could know things that were going to happen. And it was kind of traumatic for her to wake up with these abilities and still living under the roof of a psychiatrist. So it was, for her, it was a traumatic experience learning how to deal with this. And then, how interesting, she moved on to a study of Zen Buddhism, where she studied for 4 years with a teacher in Europe. And I mean, this is quite a different way of looking at the world through Zen Buddhism. I think it probably helped her come to terms with her abilities. But then she went on to earn a master's degree in counseling psychology from Southwestern College in Santa Fe. And so today she does what she calls shamanic psychotherapy sessions. which does not sound like those two go together, shamanism and psychotherapy. So, Louisa, it is a pleasure to you welcome you again to Shaman's Keep. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Caroline. I'm so happy to be here again.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I so enjoyed our talk last time. And of course, this time I want to get more into what you actually do, how you blend shamanism and psychotherapy in your work. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I found that they're compatible because more and more I'm calling the shamanic work that I do, I call it the new shamanism because it's post-Freudian, it's post-Jungian. And the fact is that since shamanic ways started about 40,000 years ago, we as a culture and Western civilization have contributed to the body of understanding of what helps human beings to heal and to heal physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So we have added some important tools to the shamanic repertoire, especially over the past century or so. So my work really embraces both the shamanic practices that are, as you know, so ancient, and also the ways in which we've developed a much more multidimensional understanding of our psyche. In pre-agricultural times and horticultural times, it was extremely important to be identified as a tribe and to refine our ability to act as a group consciousness. And what really happened over the past 100 years or so was that we began to develop an awareness and an ability to reflect on our own individual psyches and to include the individual psyche as part of group consciousness. So I blend those two components in my private healing work and in the workshops that I teach, and I teach a lot of workshops. So does that give you a little bit of an idea of where I'm coming from with with bringing in the psychotherapy part to shamanism?
Yes. Well, actually, you now have the language, the psychotherapy language to be able to describe what we do in shamanism, which makes shamanism more available to the world, I think, because it has been considered by many people as an, old superstitious sort of belief system. And so it's interesting that you have found a way to join those two realities together to be able to help people.
Yeah, it opens up a new language in a sense. The old language, the old ways of shamanism were very much connected with mythologies and stories that had been passed on one generation to the next for hundreds of years. And so at this point, with the part that, let's say, especially Carl Jung brings to the picture, because while I have a great deal of respect for the work that Sigmund Freud did in validating that we have a rich inner landscape individually, Carl Jung then made that kind of shamanic leap to include that, yes, we have a personal individual psyche, and we also share a group or world psyche, a world soul. And that's very in alignment with how shamanic practices have worked for thousands of years.
Well, Carl Jung had such a broad mind and was so willing to accept other ways of seeing the world. I mean, he also was interested in astrology, and I read something very interesting once about him where he was at a cocktail party and this man came over to him and said, he was very huffy about this, and he said, "How can you, as a psychiatrist, even consider talking about astrology. And Carl Jung asked him, well, have you ever studied it? And the man said, no, of course not. I would not be interested in reading anything about that. And Carl Jung said, well, then we have nothing to discuss. When you've studied it, come back and talk with me, you know? Well, I thought that was so wise of him, because that's true. I mean, for somebody that knows nothing about a subject and has just made an opinion, formed an opinion that it's worthless, how can they do that if they've never studied or don't know anything about it? So he was a very interesting man.
Very wise. And the thing about Carl Jung is that he consciously went through a complete breakdown of his ego structures, mm-hmm. which is the typical shamanic initiation.
Yes, it is.
And you mentioned in your introduction today that I at 14 had an experience like that, and it's mm-hmm. it's so alarming. And for me at 14, I had absolutely nothing to rely on.
Right, no context to fit that in.
Right. But Carl Jung documented his journey into his own unconscious and into his shadow, which was devastating and profoundly troubling for him. But the real gift for us is that he documented it, and he regarded the non-physical aspects of his experience with respect, and also with an attitude of being a student. And so in many ways, that's why he provides a bridge for me personally in connecting with the non-rational realities. And I always make a point of saying not irrational, but non-rational realities that are the non-physical dimensions. So a bridge between those, and then, you know, connecting all of that to my capacity to self-reflect and to be aware of my own consciousness.
Yes. So with his credentials, he actually sort of legitimized having psychic experiences or out-of-body experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was very much a bridge for the traditional medical world and the world of, you know, the mystic reality. And so in my private sessions and in my workshops, and I really put a lot of energy into group work at this point. I love doing individual sessions, and I find that people are so hungry. There are many people who are so hungry.
Yes.
For spiritual nourishment and to receive that nourishment in a grounded way, that I have been offering more and more workshops. So at this point, and for a number of years now, I offer seasonal ceremonies, the equinoxes, solstices, and cross-quarter days. And I blend the Native American traditions of the high desert here in the Santa Fe area, along with other indigenous cultures and indigenous traditions around these important markers in the calendar. So I bring in things like Celtic traditions and mm-hmm. Central American. Of course, my mother's family is from Mexico and Nicaragua and Honduras. So I bring some of those components in, because for me, there's a new kind of shamanism, which is about acknowledging that we have added, as I said earlier, we've added a broadened capacity to see our place in the world and in our spirituality to embrace a more universal sense of self than perhaps a tribal person did 20,000 years ago or even 3,000 years ago.
Yes, I agree. It's almost like we've had several thousand years of being students, and now we are beginning to put together the wisdom from many different aspects and cultures about life, about spirit, and we're putting these things together now to be able to have a well-rounded concept of who we are and the world, what it is, and our place in it, and that we are spirit beings having a physical experience in this world. So I love what you're doing.
I love what I'm doing. I'm going to tell you more about it. Thank you, Caroline. I'm passionate about what I'm doing. It's my life. It is my entire life. This is what I live and breathe. And one of the beauties and pleasures of facilitating groups is that I've told people that this is like having a birthday party and having people come and celebrate the same thing together, you know, at each of these gatherings. Mm-hmm. And also in the introduction today, you mentioned the wildfires that are, you know, moving through the Southwest right now. And you also mentioned, you know, about New Mexico, and we have had a number of fires. Something that has come about as a result of my feeling distressed about not just the fires, but the overall sense of imbalance in the climate and just among human beings right now, is that I started about, wow, it's been six weeks ago, at being inspired by a friend of mine here in Santa Fe named George Adello. I started what I call the 5-minute rain prayer. And this started out as prayers for there to be moisture in northern New Mexico, because at that time, 6 weeks ago, we had three huge fires, two of which I could see from my house. And we had a day of record-breaking heat, I mean, all-time record-breaking heat at the end of June. So what started out as a small group of us doing this 5-minute intensely focused meditation for rain 6 weeks ago has become a group of almost 700 people who are meditating every Sunday at 12 noon Mountain Time. But of course, you know, that wherever time zone they are, they would translate that to their time zone. And we are holding now an intent for rain, either of the what I call the wet variety, or for some places, because some places have too much rain right now. So it's either rain of the wet variety or of what I call the spiritual purifying cleansing variety, and balance and nourishment for all beings. And this has become such a beautiful gathering of kindred loving people on Sunday. So I want to mention that to you and to your listeners, that I would love for them to join us.
Oh, and wonderful. What time do you do that?
So it's every Sunday, 12 noon Mountain Time. So that's, you know, that would be 11 a.m. Pacific Time and 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern. And we also have people from all over the planet. There's a woman in the U.K. who joins in every Sunday for this.
Oh.
And we have had an extraordinary amount of rainfall since then.
Yes. In fact, today, the thunder beings are moving in from the west. The clouds are rolling in. And
we're going
to have some rain here, and then it's moving over toward your area. So it's coming, Louisa.
The work is working.
Yes.
It is. And you know, when I hold an intent for rain, I make it clear in my own being that I don't know what balance is for, you know, nature and this world at this time. I know that I would like to see the animals and the plants and also the humans relieved of, you know, the suffering that comes with intense heat and dryness and fire. And I always, when I hold these intents, I make a space to really just sit in that place of, I'm not God, I don't know what is right, but I do know that I want all beings to be nourished, and I know that I want all beings to be happy.
And safe. Yes.
Happy and safe. Yes. Yeah. So, and if your listeners are interested, I have a link to, it's a Facebook event page. That's where people want to RSVP and get a sense of being part of this meditation community. They can go to the homepage of my website, and on the sidebar, there's a little link that says 5-minute rain prayer.
Oh, that's great. So anyone can go to your Facebook page and see that event?
They they can. It's easier to find my website. My website is
okay.
It's simply luisakolker.com, LuisaKolker.com, and then find the link. They can also go to my Facebook like page. It's got a really long name. I gave it a really long name when I started it.
Okay. What is
but
that?
I'll mention what it is. It's called Santa Fe Shamanic Healing Journeys with Luisa Kolker. That's the Facebook page. And I will be posting more information about the 5-minute rain prayer on there. So I wanted to mention that to you because this is also part of what I feel the original purpose of shamanism was to gather people, animals, plants, minerals, all of the elements together as one community who are existing, coexisting in a way that is respectful and that is harmonious. And of course, that is so contrary to the dominator model of power and consciousness that's so rampant in the planet right now. So this is a little oasis of remembering and renewing one's connection both with the human community, but also with the plants and the animals, the minerals, and the elements.
Yes, remembering that we are all one.
We are like
cells in the body of this this great life form that we call Earth.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. So that was a little bit of a digression, Caroline, but since you mentioned the fires and people indeed feel the distress, we can feel it in our biology that something is amiss.
Yes, it's affecting so many people across the Southwest right now. And of course, we had those 19 firefighters in Arizona that were caught in something they had no way of dealing with. And then, of course, all over the Southwest, homes are being lost and people are being evacuated and smoke is in the air. In fact, here where I am, they told us to stay inside today because the smoke is so heavy that it might cause breathing problems or so forth. So this is something that's affecting huge areas of the country and so many people. And it's good to remember that we are all one and we're part of all of this. And we can address some of those other parts of ourselves and ask for help and ask for, the rain, the thunder beings to come and bring the rain and to ask the fire spirits and the wind spirits to, cooperate and not cause harm to anyone, animals or humans. There's just so much in the path of a fire that gets destroyed. And so, but we can remember that we're one. And I love this 5-minute rain meditation that you're doing. And so I urge everyone that's listening to this to take part in it this Sunday. We need all the spirits possible working together to help bring this to a good close and in a good way.
Yes. Good. I hope that people will join us. There's a really nourishing sense of community that's developing with this. And it's wherever you are, it doesn't cost anything. And the rewards are many.
Oh, yes, and for 5 minutes of your time, hello, people, you can do it. I will do it Sunday.
Caroline.
Okay. Getting back to your work that you're doing there, I know that you have a series of workshops called the Transformation Workshops, and you blend, emotional trauma healing with some of your other – tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so it's a way to transform emotional trauma into grace and into spiritual power. And when I say the word power in this context, I'm talking about the power that is sweet, the power that is a shared connection with Source. So it's not power over, it's the sense, but it is the sense of being, as you have said, having this unity consciousness with source energy. So in my transformation workshop, there is a three-level series. What we do is we are working with what I call the front body of our emotional selves. I have developed what I call the three-body model for detoxifying trauma. And the front body is literally the front of our physical bodies. It's where we experience our trauma reactions, limbic brain reactions to outside situations based on not only our own personal history, but also based on the ancestral history that we carry with us in our DNA and in our emotional templates. So an example of a front body, a front body trauma reaction would be that I get into a conversation with someone I'm really close to, and they say something that triggers a shame response for me, and instead of my having the ability to stay present with my own feeling, I go into reaction and have some kind of a comeback that then makes communication and makes being relational with that person almost impossible. And we all do this all the time. It's also a component of projection, where if you say to me, "Did you take out the trash?" And I go, "What do you mean? Why you think I never do anything right?" Or, you know, something like that. That, mm-hmm. That right there creates a breakdown in being relational with another person, because there's a projection onto them that you think I'm a bad person. Mm. They might think that, but we haven't verified that. So in Transformation 1, we're working a lot with being able to identify what are the reactions, what are the personal history templates that we carry in our brains and our central nervous system that get in the way of our experiencing unity consciousness. Mm-hmm. And we then use the shamanic journey technique to bypass our ego consciousness in order to begin relating to hurt parts of ourselves rather than having them become our identity. So rather than having my wounded inner little girl running my adult life, if I do a journey to that wounded inner little girl and I'm able to become relational with her, then I will no longer be identified with her. I can come to her assistance. I can help her to grow up. I can help her to heal. And probably most reassuringly, I can make it clear to her that a 5-year-old little girl does not have to take care of my, you know, grown up woman's adult life. So does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I know that, I work with a lot of people on core belief systems that they have formed as small children. Because sometimes we form beliefs when we accidentally spill the milk or something, and a parent goes berserk over it and says things that, you know, that are hurtful, like "you can't do anything right" and "what's the matter with you," you know, and we may form core beliefs at that point in time that are still affecting us, even though we've grown up now and we've forgotten pretty much the incident that happened. But we find that we're not able to function well in society, that we can't seem to do anything right. And it's that core belief that's still lurking there in the subconscious. And so people really need to get in touch with those and be able to dismantle them through the eyes of an adult. Because as an adult, you can say, "Well, maybe Dad was just having a bad day that day, and when he was yelling at me and spilling the milk, that was just an accident. I was just a little kid, so it wasn't no big thing, you know." And they have to be able to dismantle those things and heal those core beliefs, revamp them to an adult way of seeing things.
Right. Exactly. And so with the transformation model, we are journeying to the spirit of that wounded child. And to me, a wound really refers to having distorted self concept as a result of an incident or a bunch of incidents. So in the shamanic model of consciousness, everything is alive and everything has a spirit. And in the Jungian model of depth psychology, we develop over time as a result of our ancestry and as a result of our own personal history and as a result of the collective unconscious of which we're a part, we develop what Carl Jung calls a complex, an autonomous complex. So what can happen is that if my wounded little girl and her distorted self-concept, which thinks that there's something wrong or bad or defective about her, as I go through the years of 0 to 17 in my, you know, development, my childhood, that self-concept becomes one of these autonomous complexes that Carl Jung talked about. And the problem with an autonomous complex is it starts to become hermetically sealed. It starts to believe that it is reality in and of itself, and it becomes resistant to being in relationship with the here and now or with a core, central, wise part of ourselves. So in the transformation model, we are making intentional communication. We're coming into intentional relationship with these autonomous complexes. And because we're in that theta brainwave state of the shamanic journey state, we're able to have an in. We're able to make contact with that complex in non-ordinary reality. Because in ordinary consciousness, you know, you cannot shift or change a system within a system. You cannot, those autonomous complexes are out of reach and they're inaccessible to being related. But when we are in that theta brainwave state and we're in the company of a benevolent helping spirit, a power animal or a guardian spirit, those complexes allow us in. And that is where really the amazing healing breakthroughs happen in this transformation model that I'm teaching in my workshops. So that's the front body, and that deals with our personal history. That's in transformation one. And as we go into transformation two and transformation three, we then start to access what I call the middle body, which is actually the physical back body. It's the neuroreceptors in the spine, in the occiput at the base of the skull, and that even though it's our physical back body, I call it the middle body because it is the bridge between the front body and source. And source is what I call the back body. And our back body, our energetic back body, is not located in the physical body. It's behind your physical back body. And so little by little, what happens in these workshops, Caroline, is, and the objective of them, is that people are not just learning concepts, but they are, through these the journeys that they make to inner space, they are developing what I call their energetic infrastructures, which becomes our energetic ability to hold and transform energy without freaking out. Because so often what happens, like when people report having out of control kundalini experiences or having kriyas or having, you know, just having psychotic breaks, often it's the result of them receiving tremendous amounts of spiritual energy, but they don't have any place in their inner selves, in their internal energy bodies to build with that. And instead it's like a super surge of electricity in a lightning storm. It blows people's circuits. So one of the ultimate objectives of this transformation model of healing is that participants are little by little creating, developing, and strengthening their energetic infrastructures and their capacity to stay present with powerful spiritual energies.
So basically, you are teaching them how to do a shamanic journey and go to those parts of themselves, and actually do the healing work themselves.
That's
Is that
right.
what you're saying? Oh, okay.
That's a part of it, because I believe in empowering people with a workshop or a session. I want them to, it's like as if I could offer people a place to live, let's say a psychic house in which to live, and that every time they came to visit me, they could live in my psychic house with me and experience my capacity to be present with intense energies. But then what's the point if then they leave my psychic house and they cannot develop that for themselves? So the idea is that they are developing their own intimate relationship with their inner landscape and with these archetypes and parts of themselves that live inside of them. And these different archetypes and parts of the psyche, I call their inner community. And what I say is that I cannot be in good relationship with my external outer community of my local community or the planet unless I have learned how to be relational, respectful, and in communication with my inner community.
Well, that's at the core of most people's problems. They don't know how to be with themselves. Some people can't bear to be alone. And if they are alone, they have to have a TV or a radio or something making noise and something going on around them. Because if they're completely alone in silence, they have to face themselves. They have to listen to their own thoughts. And a lot of people are very resistant to that. They're very afraid of having to really look at themselves. So
That's
this
right.
is, yes. So this is a good way of helping people to reach a place where they can safely examine some of the aspects of themselves and bring them more into harmony.
That's right. And it's also a structured way to experience initiation, because going into one's inner self, breaking through that barrier of isolation from one's inner reality, that truly is an epidemic. There's an epidemic of almost, it's like kind of fear around going into inner space. But
Oh,
in these
absolutely.
work, yeah, in these workshops, we are partaking of another shamanic tradition, which is to bring in the group setting as part of initiation, that you know that you have other people who are with you, who are rooting for you, and who have compassion and empathy for you because they have either been through this or they are stepping over the threshold into the initiation themselves. So I create all my workshops, the transformation workshops, my seasonal ceremonies, all of them are set up with the structure of ceremony, so that we are being held by a container of spirit and acknowledging that, we're huge as souls and we're also little as people. Both that both of those can coexist, that we're
Yes.
little, we're young, spiritually speaking, many of us are really learning how to evolve from being children into being adults. So the workshop space is very safe, and I'm known as being the boundary queen in my workshops because I feel very passionate about people being respectful of each other in a circle. So I don't let people give other people advice. I ask people to refrain from giving us their cosmology on New Age, spirituality. And I ask people to stay very, very close to their own personal experience, because that's part of what engenders intimacy with their own inner self, is that they keep their focus on what their own experience is. So that's
Well,
one of the things as well.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you create a sacred space for them to work in. I think that is extremely important. I don't do any kind of journey work without, calling in the powers, the directions and things like that. How do you create sacred space?
Well, I create a medicine wheel, and I too call in the directions. I create a mesa or an altar in the center of our space. It's very beautiful because I love creating beauty in ceremony. To me, that is another one of those things that bridges us with spirit. So, yeah, so I call in the directions. I honor the elements, and just as you do at the beginning of, your show every week, I have my own version of that. Now, my background is not specifically Native American, although that has been part of my that's there in my experiences in doing ceremony. But my first experiences with ceremony were through Wicca, and I was a teenage witch.
Oh dear.
Yeah, well, Wicca comes from Europe. It was the shamanic practices of Europe, and it was the earth-based practices. And there's been a lot of let's say conflation and confusion of Wicca with somehow being connected with
Witchcraft.
witchcraft. Yes.
Yes.
And I don't even personally have a problem with witchcraft, but I will call let's call it Wicca, because it was about I this was when I was 11, 12 years old. I started talking to the spirits in my backyard, and I started talking to the sky, and I learned about how the Celtics and the Druids connected with nature. So when I call in a circle in my workshops and in my ceremonies, I'm honoring what is so obviously there for us. It's so obvious, and that's one of the things that I think is powerful about ceremony, is that we begin to slow our minds down and drop into the rhythm of the earth. And when I drop into the rhythm of the earth, then I start to see how everything is shimmering, everything is
Yes.
illuminated all the time.
Yes, everything is moving, pulsating with this
That's right.
life force energy. Yes.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you create sacred space. And so you've gone through so many different ways of learning. How did you learn to do the shamanic journey? Who taught you that?
I learned to do the shamanic journey from a couple of, well, I'd say 3 weekend workshops I did in the, gosh, when was it? It must have been early 90s with Sandra Ingerman and with Michael
Oh.
Harner.
Oh, okay.
And so I learned the core shamanic journey. I learned how to find a power animal. And then I also at one time had a person here in Santa Fe who I did some exchanges with, and she helped me to refine my ability to journey. And we would trade journeying for each other, and that was helpful. And then I read everything I could, but you know what? As soon as I learned the journey, the basic, the core shamanic journey technique, it was so instinctive to me.
Well, of course, the spirit helpers take over from there. Once we have learned how to go to them, they begin to teach us. And that's what Michael Harner says himself, that, once you know how the basic journey and you can go to your teacher and everything, then they will teach you and they will take you where you need to go. And, so they open up all those worlds of spirit for us.
Yeah, it's a wonderful transportation system, and it's a respectful and sacred transportation system. When you introduced me, you talked about my teacher in Spain, and just one of the things I did with her was I learned how to sit Zazen Buddhist, doing the Zazen sitting practice in Buddhism. But my teacher, who I studied with in a one-on-one apprenticeship for 4.5 years, her name was Ioana Salagin. She passed away 3 years ago. But in that everyday 4.5 year long apprenticeship, what we really did was she taught me how to access non-physical dimensions and to be in communication with those dimensions and to track my perceptions. So she was in the direct lineage of Rudolf Steiner, who many people know him as having been the founder of the Waldorf schools. Not many people in this country know that he was one of the most brilliant metaphysicians who ever lived. And my teacher, Yolanda, was in direct lineage. It went from from Rudolf Steiner to a Polish mystic named Stefan Lubienski, who was my teacher, Joanna's teacher, and then Joanna initiated me into that lineage. So I'm technically a part of that lineage from Rudolf Steiner. I would be the fourth generation. Hmm. And Rudolf Steiner was all about opening perception and access to the inner planes and integrating that into one's self-concept and in one's ability to live a more full life as a human being and a life in which one would be empathic and relational with the worlds of the spirit as well as third dimensional reality. Mm.
Wow. Are there books by Rudolf Steiner or?
Many books. Yeah. Many books. Yes. In Europe, there are hospitals that are based on his healing model. The whole biodynamic way of gardening, I don't know if you've heard of that, but he was one of the first proponents of kind of conscious agriculture where you work with the phases of the moon and you work with the energies of the earth. And so he created something called biodynamic gardening or farming. And he also he started the Waldorf schools, which to this day, I mean, they're actually probably flourishing more now than they did in his day back in the early part of the 20th century. He's written many books, and they're well worth reading. He was an incredible metaphysician, scientist, doctor, healer, philosopher, and writer.
I'll have to look at those because I'm very interested in that. Louisa, we are out of time, and it just goes so fast when you and I get together and talk.
It does.
You can reach Louisa at louisacolcor.com, and all of your information is on there about your workshops and your healing practices and everything. I want to thank you for joining us today because you're always enlightening and fascinating. So thank you.
Well, thank you for listening, Caroline. I really enjoy being with you, and thank you for allowing me to share so much in one short hour. I appreciate
yes.
it.
Yes, thank you so much. And for my listeners, until next week, I want to remind you that next week I have Ed Eagleman McGaw as my guest. He's an Oglala Sioux who is just a wonderful man, respected by both the white man and the red man. So tune in next week to hear some really wonderful wisdom from Eagle Man. Okay, and until then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.